Hello?
Hey, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Trying to find my syllabus so I can get that open up.
Oh, I got that.
I like to follow
along. How was your Thanksgiving?
Good. We had a quiet Thanksgiving, which is very nice. And then my niece came to visit, which is always fun to have company.
Very nice.
Yeah. And then that's that. Very quiet.
Good.
How about yourself?
It was good. I took my, I live in Baltimore. One of my sons is going to school in Atlanta, so he came back for the weekend. And then we went to see his grandparents and some other relatives for Thanksgiving, which was very nice.
Fun.
And then on Sunday, we went to visit with one of my brothers in Philadelphia, and that was nice, too.
You just traveled around the East Coast then, eh?
A little bit, yeah. We did a couple of 2-hour drives. I guess it was about, from where we are, about 3 hours to New Jersey, and then it was about 2.5 hours to Philadelphia.
That's not bad.
No, it wasn't too bad.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Dave. I hope you're doing great. I hope you saw my note about our last seminar on neuromarketing your professional practice. I wanted to be sure that any questions or comments or feedback that you have, that we were able to do it in a meaningful way for you. And at the beginning of the class, if there are questions that you have or comments or challenges from any of the material, or just additional ideas, I'm interested to hear from you and what you think and any questions you have. Who would like to begin?
I think are there just two of us so far?
Would you get a little bit closer to your microphone, please?
You bet. I was going to say, is it just two of us or who?
Carolyn is here from Corvallis.
Hi.
Welcome. And would you do your question again?
Oh, I was just curious if it was just Harvey and me or if there was somebody else on the line.
Oh, there are others on the line. But
okay.
Any comments or questions?
Not from me.
Okay.
I don't have any.
Okay. Well, I
this is Carolyn, and I've just been unable to open up the documents that I received prior to the first class 4 weeks ago.
When you say documents you received, help me understand.
The printout of the course.
Okay, when you went to the page, the website page, where the playback is and clicked on the outline, you weren't able to do that?
No.
Okay. Contact Bernadette, support@coachtrainingalliance.com.
Okay.
She can help you with any kind of technical matters. support@coachtrainingalliance.com, Bernadette. The recording should be available still for 30 days after the last day of class.
Oh, good.
For online playback. Okay?
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry you didn't have that because it could have made the following along. The outline is fairly annotated, and I did that so that you wouldn't have to write a bunch of stuff and you could more listen and kind of see what made sense to you. Other questions, comments, or things that would be helpful for us to talk about? Well, I'll move us to lecture mode then, and we'll have ideally a bit more time at the end, so jot down any questions or comments that you have. We're about to talk about the neuromarketing and applied to your professional practice. There are four questions I'd like you to consider and just jot down a yes or no for each of the four. Your immediate answer. Do you earn your living by offering others goods or services to other people? Two, do you work for yourself or run your own operation, even if part-time? Three, does your work require elastic skills, the ability to do a variety of different functions throughout the day? And four, do you work in education, training, coaching, human resources, or healthcare? If your answer is yes to any one of these four questions, you're in sales and service. If you're a doctor, attorney, accountant, consultant, coach, or business professional, you're in sales and service. To deliver a fantastic experience to your clients is the best sales strategy there is. We're going to talk about neuromarketing. That's simply an integration of biological and social sciences to understand conscious choices and the underlying brain activity that determines consumer choices. I think this can be very helpful. When we engage potential clients with a product or service in mind, we want to move them to part with their resources, including time, attention, and effort. If they do, we will bring value and they will be better at the end of the engagement. Teachers sell their students that the science lesson they're teaching is the most interesting thing ever. In healthcare, the physical therapist helps someone recover from injury to handle resources, time, attention, effort, to become patients, actually because patients can be healthier if they use these resources wisely, of time, attention, and effort. To move people effectively and powerfully requires seeing them as a participant and a collaborator. Now, here's what happens if you don't do that. And this is a consultation model. People consult a physician when they're afraid or they're in pain. Just under 50% of people who get a prescription from this expert consultant actually fill it. Of those who do fill it, fewer than 50% take it as the physician directed. So when someone is motivated by fear and pain, inconvenience by time and travel, have to pay to consult an expert, less than 25% actually follow that expert advice. It doesn't become their story. So consider this question for yourself and write down a specific number as soon as you hear the question. What percent of your real work involves convincing or persuading people to give up something they value for something you have? A number. Something that will give them great value, bring them great value. Almost 10,000 professionals around the world were surveyed to address this very question. Nearly everyone considered this aspect of their work the most critical component of professional success. Yet while most people believe direct persuasion is crucial for professional success, the time allocated to engaging and directly persuading people was extraordinarily low, in the low single digits as a percent of time. What we find valuable and what we actually do may be significantly different. When we work for ourselves, we're entrepreneurs, and we become salespeople as well. What people in sales do is to move people. The persuasion industry, led by neuromarketing, is attuned to influencing everything we buy. What we purchase is for both emotional as well as intellectual reasons. Most often, our choices have been influenced in ways so subtle that we've even failed to recognize them. Here's an example of a failure in influence. A cigar manufacturer spent considerable money on an advertisement that showed a beautiful, smiling woman handing out cigars to her husband and his friends. It was attractively done in an elegant English library setting and widely displayed. The result, a dramatic fall in cigar sales. Well, why was this? Men smoke cigars because in doing so, they unconsciously feel dominant and important. By showing a woman encouraging a man to smoke and being subservient to her offering, the advertisement was psychologically countering the male customer's intent. So, let's look at some misconceptions about selling. When I asked my good buddy, Art Wilson, this question, he had considerable background in this. He took an early retirement to start his own hugely successful consulting company and co-found with me what's our What's Next Exec Retreats. For several years, he was the number one salesperson in IBM's group of over 10,000 sales professionals before he moved to a senior executive position there and before he retired early to start his own consulting. Here are the two biggest misconceptions that he passed on. The first misconception, selling is a natural gift. For more than 90% of people, including the most successful salespersons, this is simply not true. Someone may do the right thing for the right reason, but it has to be combined with the right style and emotion. So the more we know about how people's minds and brains work, the better we can be at selling without being salesy. The second misconception, the best salespeople have no call reluctance. Over 90% of the best salespeople have very definite call reluctance, but they do it anyhow by getting in the optimum state of mind and sticking to their plan. Pick people you want to reach out to and do it. You don't have to be motivated, but you do have to have a plan and stick to it. Shrink the change, a designated number of calls per day. So consider these two questions. If the person you're selling to agrees to buy, will his or her life improve? Two, when your interaction is over, will the world be a better place than when you began? If the answer to either of these questions is not yes, you need to recalibrate. It's said that marketers most often make these three mistakes: assuming that people are rational, assuming people are eager for change, assuming that once someone knows things the way you know them, they're going to choose what you choose or offer. And remember this, it's what you think you already know that will most prevent you from learning. So let's talk about the 1%. Professor Harold Koh teaches law and emphasizes that in an attempt to understand the law or an understanding just about anything, the key is to focus on the 1%, to not get lost in the details, but to think about the essence of what's really important, the 1% that gives life and meaning to the other 99%. Understanding that 1% and especially being able to explain it to others is the hallmark of a strong position. The 1% is the essence of simplicity and clarity. Whether you're selling a product, a service, or trying to convince anyone of anything, what's the 1%? When you can answer that question and convey it to others, you and they are likely to be moved. Einstein put it very simply, if you can't state your position simply, you don't understand it well enough. And Seth Godin doubled down to Einstein and said, if you can't state your position in 8 words or less, you don't have a position. The purpose of a 1%, and think of the purpose maybe of a pitch, it's not necessarily to move someone else to adopt your idea. The purpose is to offer something so compelling that it begins a conversation. The measure of success after your statement is when the other person says, tell me more. The other person begins being a participant to eventually arrive at an outcome that may appeal to both of you. This is about collaboration. The essence of what professional coaching is about is collaboration. This is also what I'm talking about here. So let's look at the value proposition. The pitch, in other words. There are three common types. The one-word pitch. What is the one characteristic that you most want associated with your name, your business, your brand? A one-word equity. When anyone thinks of you, what do you want them to think of? One word that they associate to. When anyone says that word, they think of you. For me recently, it was to make up a word, NeuroMentor. I liked it so much, I trademarked it and initiated the first of a new series of online offerings as NeuroMentor with one word and the N and M are caps. Other examples, and each to date are a little more famous than NeuroMentor. What technology company do you think of when you hear the word search? What credit card company comes to mind when you hear the word priceless? Well, Google and MasterCard. In his 2012 re-election campaign, President Obama built his entire strategy around one word, forward. The second pitch, or value proposition, the question pitch. In 1980, Ronald Reagan was running for president in a very grim economy. He simply asked a question. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? The question was designed to make people come up with their own reasons for agreeing or not. When people come up with their own answers and agree or believe something, they endorse the belief way more strongly and become more likely to act on it because it becomes their story, which is why people respond so little to physicians making recommendations. Physician tells them what to do. It's not their story. When it becomes their story, it's significantly different. And a third, the Twitter pitch. Brief, simple, specific. A micro message of 140 or fewer characters. The mark of an effective tweet, like that of an effective pitch, is that it engages recipients and encourages them to take the conversation further. And further may be responding, asking a question, clicking a link, sharing a tweet, or signing on for a seminar. What tweets do you think have the highest rating? Of all categories of tweets, readers assign the highest rating to tweets that ask questions of followers. This confirms the power of questions to engage and to persuade and to get someone thinking about their story. Listen to learn. We know in coaching that asking the right question has more power than giving people the right answer. We know that appreciative inquiry can get much better results than seeking out and solving problems. So, for preparation, let's look at your purpose and plan. Your purpose. Three key questions will help you prepare your value proposition, your pitch, whichever of the above varieties you choose, or if you make up one. You will clarify your purpose by making sure that you can answer these three questions. What do you want someone to know? What do you want someone to feel? What do you want someone to do? And remember, we make our decisions, we decide what to do based on how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. So, your plan. Before you connect with a prospect, write down these four things. If this call or discussion or email is successful, what's the next best action for that person and for me to take? In other words, is it clear to that person what the next action is? Two. What would we talk about that would be the highest value objective of a client for that interaction? What are some good questions to ask the prospect? And then a fourth, if we have time, what are some other possible topics for the discussion? For most people, the opposite of talking isn't listening, it's waiting. When others speak, we usually divide our attention between what they're saying now and what we're going to say next. The result is a mediocre halfway position on both. Some professionals don't even bother to wait. A typical study found that physicians interrupt the majority of patients in the first 18 seconds that they begin to speak during an appointment. This often prevents the patient from describing what brought him or her into the office in the first place. Here's an example of listening differently. Suppose you're raising money for a charity and you ask someone to contribute $200. If she says, "Sorry, I can't give $200, consider that an offer. Perhaps she can donate a smaller amount. Or she might say, "No, I can't give right now." Consider also reframing that as an offer. The obvious move is to focus on the right now and ask when might be a better time. Or even consider the entire sentence as an offer, perhaps to contribute to your charity in some other way, such as being a volunteer. This way to hear responses as offers is to change the way you listen and the way you respond. When both parties view an encounter as an opportunity to learn, the desire to sell or win fades in the background. It's a different mindset of collaboration and engagement. When we move from selling to serving, we engage the recipient as a collaborator and become empathically attuned to their needs and how we can benefit them. This non-salesy approach is the ability to influence, persuade, and change behavior while crafting a link between what others want and you can provide, a bridge. We elicit from people what their specific goals are and frame what we can do to help them achieve those goals. Consider this question. To persuade someone, should you focus on the potential or on the benefit, the result? Neuromarketing studies find that emphasis on the potential is far more compelling than the result, even when there are outstanding facts and accomplishments already occurred. There are two reasons from this. One, the past has already happened, so it's closed. And looking to the future and to the potential allows expansiveness of possibility and the activation of a different part of the brain to look at possibilities. Anticipation triggers a dopamine release, the pleasure chemical. This suggests to pay even more attention to the order of the message. After addressing the challenge or pain point, focus on potential future benefits that your proposal offers, followed by examples of what has previously delivered. For example, benefits and then testimonials from trusted sources. So, for sales mastery, there are three phases: engage, enroll, and create conviction. Each is based on knowing who your client is, the specific person you're about to engage in conversation. So, let's look at these three aspects, these three phases of sales mastery very carefully. To engage is to connect and create interest. This is an application of social and emotional intelligence. Important to your story is your hero. Who's the hero of your story? Now, heroes come in all varieties: teller, listener, customer, product, location, tribe. The hero needs to fit the goal. Let's look at this more specifically. Stories involve the art of the tell, and they involve the hero, the character in the story who gives the audience a point of view. All the passion in the world won't do any good unless we have some place to put it. That's where the hero comes in. The hero serves as the reader's or the listener's guide and surrogate. The hero is the character that the reader or listener identifies with. If the audience experiences the story through the hero and the story leads the hero to embrace a call to action, then your audience will automatically hear your call to action as well. The hero is the place, person, product, or brand that enables your audience to feel the change your story promises. Remember, we do what we do based on how we're going to feel. We imagine, we feel when we do it. In every story, there's one person who can make the difference. That's the hero, the character the reader or the viewer identifies with. So focus on the experience you deliver. Remember that we spoke of business stories like novels and films, consisting of three parts: the challenge, the struggle, and the resolution. The hero faces the challenge, fights through the struggle, to the resolution. Now, the hero may sometimes be surprisingly hard to pinpoint, but unless you do, you don't have a story. When people donate to a charitable cause, it's not to save the lives of tens of thousands of children, but the best part of the story is how you can save one child. You become the hero. For example, donation increases significantly when moving from the abstract to the specific. A famine in Ethiopia was significantly enhanced when provided a picture of Royka, a 7-year-old who faces a threat of severe hunger or even starvation. It is for Royka that the donor becomes the hero. How do you make your client the hero for your professional engagement? We ask, what do you want to achieve? Where would you ideally like to be in 1 year? What would be an amazing achievement for you? Then we can know how to help them get there. So you need to know the single most important thing you could offer your client. Remember, it's not about you. It's about them. So here are 6 keys to preparation. This is your homework for a client. Know your client's challenges and needs. Know your own product and its advantages and benefits. Know your competition, but never engage in depreciating a competitor. 4, know the potential objections so that you can have responses ready. 5, expect the best, a state of positive expectation. And 6, create demand, ideally for the client to convince him or herself or herself. Anchor yourself to success. Remember our seminar last week. Peak performance comes from being in a peak state. The hallmark of a true professional is the ability to manage and regulate a state of mind. So, these are keys to making effective contact. 4. 1, set specific goals. 3, be creative, playful, and fun. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. 3, have a plan for what you're going to say. And 4, do it in abundance to qualified contact. You're more likely to stop yourself from making contact if you're not in a peak state, or if you believe you're in an interruption, or if you believe that someone wouldn't be able to afford your services. Think about anything that gets in the way of the positive benefit delivered in abundance. That's something to be avoided, to be refrained. To engage the client, connection and rapport are the foundation of all influence. Clients will choose you because they trust you, like you, and especially because they have confidence in you. The confidence is the belief that you can help them get what they want or need. And that's beginning with you. You have to have the confidence to know that if somebody becomes your client and works with you, you will help them get what they want or need. Importantly, they will choose you because they believe you have their best interest at heart. Caring people buy from caring people. And they'll even help you close as long as you have the person's best interest at heart. People want to feel cared for. We all want to feel appreciated. People love people who change their state of mind. That's why entertainers are paid so incredibly much more than educators, pro athletes more than service people. We want to be around people who change our state for the better. The law of reciprocation, and this is positive or negative, whatever you put out, it will come back manyfold. So be sure it's positive. Here are 3 psychological tactics for revealing aspects of yourself that create instant credibility, ways to present what is authentically there that can connect. One, you may argue against your own product or service, particularly to indicate who the product or service is not for, because it says you're not trying to do everything for everybody, but a more specific benefit to certain people. People believe precise numbers, so do your research. Which is more believable, for example? 60% of American households recycle regularly, or 60.37% of American households recycle regularly. 78% of participants said the more specific number was more believable because it inferred accuracy. When you make a claim, provide proof to back it up. Now, different forms of proof are available if there are no scientific studies, for example, and that's often the case in our profession. Statistics, personal stories, testimonials, research, professional or media-given accolades. The second component of sales mastery, enroll. Discover your client's needs. What are their needs, their interests, their challenges, the real problems that we can help them solve? This is the only reason that people will pay you money, to help them do or be something that they can't do or be by themselves. Highlight the problems and resonate with the pain, the challenge. This is what the client may minimize or deny, but do it in the process of looking at engagement and solutions and what you'll do together. Now, here are some qualifying questions, four of them, that you might have in mind, though not to ask, not necessarily to ask out loud. And hear what I'm saying. I'm not suggesting you ask this of the client, but these are four questions to have in mind about the client, especially having to do with needs, wants, challenges, and authority. For needs, what does the prospect really need? For wants, what does the prospect really want? For challenges, what are the primary needs, challenges, and pain points? And authority, do they have the authority to make the decision? Remember that focus changes state. What would be the best benefit to you of doing this? When your question prompts someone to imagine, it becomes real for them. If you told them instead of asked them, they wouldn't believe. Remember that facts and information are outside in the outer circle of brain. This is not the decision-making area. So, to enroll, do two things specifically. Ask questions. This creates a focus, kind of like a canvas to paint a picture. Ask questions for them to get a real experience inside themselves and give you real answers. Questions are the greatest asset. Questions empower you and the buyer by putting them in a state that makes things more congruent. And secondly, do something very real. Engage all five senses to give a full experience. Some of the highest paid people in the country are people who induce state changes. What sells is what puts someone in a better state. So here's an exercise I'd suggest. Each night for 10 nights, come up with three ideas about how you can get potential clients to feel like they already own your service or your product before even buying it. Think of creative and unique ways to do that consistently, or depending on your biorhythms, first thing in the morning. Now, most of the 30 that you come up with may be sort of goofy, but you only need one or two to change your business. Here's an example. A realtor whose clients like a particular house they viewed, but they haven't decided. He then orchestrates an entire meal catered to the family in the home they're considering. They have a fabulous meal and experience the fresh flowers he's brought in. They can picture themselves in that home. They have an experience of eating and the camaraderie of the family. That house and experience became their story. His close rate, just over 80%, over 10 times the average of seasoned salespeople in the industry. Model success. Find successful people and see what they do. They most likely will make the experience real using all five senses. If someone's eating food, it changes their state, and that state links to an immediate anchor of being with you. That's why so much business is done at lunches and dinners. The realtor changed the state of mind of the purchasers and linked both pleasure and family togetherness with that house. He created a vivid Rorschach that the family projected their hopes and their excitement onto. The principle here, whatever's happening around someone when they have a strong feeling, it will be linked, it will be anchored in their brain. Now, it's not logical. Now, is there any relationship between dog chow and a bell? Well, if they're coupled, Pavlov showed us that a dog thought so. Pavlov's dog linked the bell with food and salivated, then only the bell was enough to cue the anticipation. Put people in an environment that creates the state you want to link to your product. An example is the brilliant series of Super Bowl Budweiser commercials of the dog and the Clydesdale, who are buddies. They induce a state of connection and bonding with the release of oxytocin in the brain. Here's the best signal of a successful oxytocin release. Aww. The kind of response we have to babies. The message goes right to your hippocampus to connect that experience with Budweiser. Or another example, the new car smell that puts you in a state to buy a new car. BMW has even made their brochures impregnated with that new car smell. I smell the brochures. The total sensory and emotional experience with the salesperson, that's you, matters. So get creative. Brainstorm. There's always a way to make it real and effective. Ask questions. Create an experience. Point, tell, and paint. You want a blank that will blank. Is that correct? You want an investment that will bring you security and income. Is that correct? Ask a question that will put people's minds back on the challenge. Point out the reason they're buying. Make it real by getting them to refocus. Paint to emphasize if all this came true. If you had a seminar for your people, what would be the most important thing they get out of it? If you have three results, what would those be? If you don't get those, what would it cost you? An example. In one of my offerings for a training program to an organization or a company, a corporation, if you had an internal mentoring program for your organization, how would your people benefit? Especially if the mentors are trained in appreciative inquiry, conversational, social, and emotional intelligence. Ask questions, don't tell them. Ask how much more effectiveness or success would you have if you did this. Don't tell them, get them to tell you. Here's a second exercise. Write down five questions to make it feel to the client that he or she already owns your product or service. An example, that real estate agent showing a house. The agent doesn't ask you what you think about the living room, but instead ask, where would you put your entertainment center? The assumption is it's already yours. You bought it. Where would you put your entertainment center? The agent wants to have the prospect experience it as if they've already bought it. The third component of sales mastery, compel, create conviction. People don't buy facts or features. They buy benefits for themselves. And remember, selling is the transfer of emotion. For someone to buy them is feel certain they will get what they want. And conviction starts with you first, then your client. But they have to buy or attend an event for their reasons, not yours. And that's an important distinction. The number one way, give them the experience and conviction that they will get what they want out of your product or service. The number two way, match to their number one value or purpose. For example, if it's freedom, show them how it will enhance their freedom. Find the dominant emotion for buying, even though the prospect may want to believe it's for logical reasons. Remember, we talked about how we make a decision. Neuroeconomists have shown over and over now. We make a decision first at the midbrain level before we're even consciously aware of it, then process it to the forebrain to make it be logical and conscious and make it make sense to us. So, copywriters tell us that there are five great motivators for marketing. And I'll give you an example of each of these. One is fear. Car and life insurance people use this. You might die. Exclusivity, to be special or chosen. Three, greed. Now, this is a negative connotation, but a true meaning of greed is a rapacious desire for more. So in my view, it's to succeed massively. Guilt. This is something nonprofits use at times. And a need for approval. Think about product advertisement, cars and watches, clothes. What you say doesn't make as big a difference as how you say it. The task of sales involves the science of neuromarketing. And the question you ask people determine what they focus on. And any time we're not only focusing, and this is the principle here, at any time we are only able to focus on a small band of data, what's available to us. Our brains are really more like a camera. We only see what we focus on. If you can get the person to stop focusing on whether or not they were going to do something and focus on, let's say for a moment you were going to do mentor coaching. When would you start? Then we add emotion and possibility to the new experience of a new choice to focus on moving ahead. For the client or the customer, buying means pleasure. Not buying means pain. When it feels real, it's emotional. This is ideal, of course. And our imagination is 10 times more powerful than our will. The number one reason that stops action is fear. Fear that somebody's going to make the wrong choice. Learn how to utilize, then, imagination, guided visualization, to make it real for people and paint it vividly. Ask questions. When you ask a question, it changes what somebody focuses on. Whether when somebody's focused on negative reasons, ask a question, and they'll refocus away from that negative flow. So make it real and assume the sale. When people don't buy, it's because they've linked buying with more pain than not buying. That's important to remember. If they don't buy, they associate more pain with buying than not buying, so it makes sense to not buy. When people do buy, they link buying with more pleasure than not buying. And remember, always, you've heard it from me many times now, people buy for emotional reasons and then justify with logic. So here are some thoughts, some considerations about converting objections into commitment. If someone has an objection, rather than ignore it or talk around it, you want to know specifically what it is. An objection equates to getting more information. Why wouldn't you want to know more? The best salespeople average 5 objections before a conversion. And be sure that an objection is not the projective voice of the seller. So consider an objection as a question in disguise. So an objection does three things for you. Provides the opportunity to hear the primary concern. It really crystallizes it so that then you can address it and reframe it. Secondly, it's an opportunity to understand the person's belief and fear. And third, it's the strongest opportunity to get to the real question. So objections are signposts. They're your resources. The best way to respond to an objection is to take each objection and interpret it or reframe it as a question. So rather than a reason for not buying and you just, you know, fold your tent and go home, hear it as a request for more information. Let me give you some examples. I can't afford means please show me how I can afford so it's worth it. When you know the benefit is there. I have to talk it over with someone else. This means please give me enough reasons I can go ahead and buy it without having to check and get somebody else's opinion and approval. Welcome an objection because it's information and a stepping stone to success. Treat an objection as powerful and important. Perhaps even compliment the objection as a good question because it allows both sides in to think about it and consider it. A mistake is to fight the objection. The key to influence is to align with the person. Remember, get inside the circle with them. Don't start throwing rocks from outside the circle. In spite of the fear, will the benefit be greater in doing it? If the answer is yes in their gut, they will proceed. So here are some considerations to convert objections into commitment. Don't engage the objection by countering it. Focus directs attention. Hear them out. Feed it back as a question. It puts the objection back to the questioner to examine and explain. And sometimes, often actually, when someone tries to explain an objection, they'll withdraw it. 4, get more information. Is this the real objective? 5, align with the prospect to collaborate. In a collaboration, you're on the same side. You're both in the circle. If you fight an objection, it will limit you. Instead of countering the question or the objection, align with it. I appreciate or I respect how you feel about that. Or it is an expensive investment. 6, turn the objection into a question. Reframe it. Remember, questions are the genesis of focus. You can't answer an objection, but you can answer a question. A couple of examples. Well, that brings up a question. It seems the real question is, can you get enough value to justify buying it? Or it sounds like the real question may be, how can you get benefits now? Focus on the benefit rather than the concern. For example, if there's an issue with expense, reframe it. Brag about it. Do it up front. And 7, assume the sale. The best persuaders assume the sale. Congratulate them on a wise decision. Don't thank them for the sale. The congratulation focuses on a wise decision. And finally, I want to talk a little bit about the psychology of closing. This is the point that both the salesperson and the prospect hate the most. Do the close quickly and painlessly. Here's an example. A man had a painful tooth he knew needed to be extracted. He called his dentist, whose patient he'd been for a long time. The two knew each other quite well. He asked how much the dentist would charge him to extract the tooth and how long it would take. The dentist said, well, I'll charge you $185, and it'll only take a minute. The man responded, only a minute? That's a lot of money for just a minute. And the dentist responded, well, if time is an issue, I can take as long as you want. Have your closings planned in advance, word for word, but sound natural and spontaneous, like you're talking, not like you're reading a script. So, some major requirements for closing. Positive, eager, enthusiastic. The client's requirements need to be clear. The client must understand what you're offering and value it, which you found out by asking questions. You must have rapport, friendship, and trust with the client. They must know and find benefit in what they'll get. and the product or service needs to be suited to the prospect. So the four aspects, the prospect must want it, need it, afford it, and use it. So some closing strategies. And remember, the most important thing throughout all of this is that you make recommendations clear, simple, and specific with confidence. Confidence is what will get you the most results. Some closing strategies. Never tell a client he or she's wrong. People convinced against their will are of the same opinion still. Go with the objection, indicating it is a valid concern. Then engage the message. Maybe get third-party proof, someone who's had a similar objection, saying how it worked and how glad they are of a purchase. Don't knock the competition. Sell the value and the benefits of your product. Don't engage in personal issues with the client. Don't assume authority you don't have, promises you can't keep. That's overselling. Avoid negative expectations, such as deciding the person will not buy or can't afford. Remember, the hero is the person, place, product, or brand that enables your audience to feel the change your story promises. How can you make your client the hero of his or her story? So make it easy and create a future. In conclusion, then, create a relationship that lasts through the years. The most important part of the engagement is to generate a relationship. Everything else occurs from the relationship. To prevent buyer's remorse, perhaps think about future pacing. Future pace every time someone purchases. Have buyers imagine themselves in the future, ways they will use the product or service in the future. A year from now, what will you be doing with this training that will make you glad you've done it? Link something present to your product. For example, I build into my training of mentor coaches for New Life Story Wellness and New Money Story Mentor a quarterly mentor group and a white paper each quarter, free attendance at some of my teleseminars, a registry for referrals, for corporate mentoring programs. After the training, a monthly mentor group teleconference for 12 months, each around a specific continuing learning topic and a white paper. So think about future benefits that you provide that's above and beyond what anyone might expect. Give them a reason to buy. Theirs, not yours. Emotional and logical. People will put off buying if they can, so build units of conviction. And finally, make it fun. Laugh. Change states. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Have I said that before? So finally, a summary. Strategies of successful people, top sellers. A 7-point summary of what we do. 1, we affect our own emotional state. Reset after the last experience. A number one quality. Whether it's exceptionally good or exceptionally bad, reset, get grounded and centered, prepare physically and emotionally right now. Qualify, number two, qualify prospects. Find their deepest challenges, the core emotional need that drives them. Teach them how to get what they need, their challenge or their pain point, through what you offer. 3, manage your client's state. 4, give prospects a way to justify buying, to justify getting what you have to satisfy the need. 5, flexibility. The person most flexible controls the situation. So to be successful, know the outcome, take action, know what getting closer and what getting further away from something looks like. Change your approach until you get what you want. That's the most common thing that we do in coaching. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. 6, become a team player, consistently attuned to the client's needs. Is there more value than the concern they bring? Create and sustain interest. Build trust and rapport continually. Give more than someone expects. 7, finally, Imagine inventing a device that can record memories, dreams, ideas, and transmit them to your brain and to the brains of your clients. This device, this game-changing technology, has already been invented. Storytelling. And finally, the happiest memories are of moments that end when they should have. We're done. So, we have a few minutes for questions, comments, any responses that you have. I'm interested in any and all of the above. Let me hear from you.
This is Carolyn. It's a lot to take in. I'm going to need to digest. I would like you to reiterate on the 10 nights that you're suggesting we come up with 3 ideas per night to get potential clients. If you could say just a little bit more about that, it would be really helpful for me.
Okay. It's just kind of a systematic way to think about doing something for 10 nights. Each night, think of 3 things, 3 ideas about how you can get potential clients to feel like they already own your product or service before they even buy it. So think of creative and unique ways to do it. Think of how they would experience if they already owned your product.
Okay.
How you can get them to feel like they already had it. And then, you know, it's sort of analogous to visualization. By visualizing, you rewire your brain, then you can back into a way to create a strategy to get there. So, now, and I mentioned, as you recall, not everyone, most of these are going to be kind of off the wall or goofy, but that's part of the creative process. Just write down everything that comes to you in a flow, and that's why I suggest, you know, setting aside the time. And it only takes 1 or 2, you know, to change your business.
Does that help?
Does that?
It twisted it just enough so that I get it. Thank you so much, David.
Yes. Okay. Other thoughts or questions? Anything else you'd like to elaborate on or look further at?
Hey, David. This is Chris Plemons. How's it going?
Welcome. Hey, how are you? Thanks. Go ahead.
Good. This is great, by the way. A question with objection. So, I get, sorry?
I was hearing kind of an echo. You must be on a cell phone. Go ahead. I can hear you clearly.
Okay, sorry. So I get a lot of, well, not a lot, but it seems like lately a lot of objections around, I can't start now, but maybe in a month, you know, that type of thing. What do you suggest, you know? And then my notes that I wrote down is this a real objection? Ask more questions, of course. And, you know, it sounds like the real question is, what do you suggest for that type of thing?
Here's what I would suggest. You're hearing a version. Don't get confused. I'm going to say 2 contradictory things, but the first thing I'd like you to consider is you're getting a bunch of no's. So the question is, why are you getting no's? I think that the first place I would think about is really getting anchored and centered in a very positive, optimum state of mind of confidence when you have that engagement and discuss with someone. When you use these principles, use them all from a positive state of mind, because that's what somebody's going to buy. They're going to buy your confidence. They're going to make it make sense by looking at other things. But here's when someone, and I'm not saying this is the instance here, but when someone does not have confidence, you don't want to sign on for that. And here's how that sounds. Well, you know, I know I need to, but right now I just don't have the cash flow. Or, you know, I really want to do this, but I'm going to start after the beginning of the year. Or, you know, I need to start in a month. Those are all various ways of making it gentle. Maybe the client actually believes that, because remember, they're not going to respond to a state of mind and in any way other than making it be logical and conscious and sensible. So that's what I'd work on first. Then, taking it as an indication of reframing it to say, what would allow you to start sooner? Or would it make it possible if we met less frequently that would fit better perhaps with the cash flow? Or, you know, this is something that I have heard of a handful of times over the last few years when someone does, and this just happened very recently. I began New Money Story mentor training for coaches who want to become financial coaches for financial professionals. They, you know, someone said, you know, I can't really afford it right now, although I would love to take the training. Do you offer it again? And my response was, instead of the three equal payments, would it make it more accessible to you if I got my IT guy to give you a link that would make it for six equal payments without any added interest? And the answer was yes. So think about reframing it in a way that might fit better with the actual. Is the client traveling for a month and going to be in an area of the world where there's no cell coverage, or is it just a little bit more than someone is seeing an immediate payoff and benefit for that may need to fit better with their cash flow, with their cash flow? So I would say, you know, if you're, you know, that would argue against having a 3-month commitment where somebody pays all up front, or you know, that sort of thing. But what more fits with the cash flow, making it a continuity program, a monthly retainer of a certain amount, if that's too much, would it be possible for a one-time payment? And we'll both assess if meeting twice a month is effective for you. Is that helpful, Chris?
Yeah, it's good. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I know we're a couple minutes over. Thank you all very much. I appreciate it. And those of you who aren't in attendance and listening, I appreciate all of your feedback. I welcome any additional feedback you have. And if I can be of help to you in any way, I hope you'll let me know. Thanks very much. It's been a privilege to have the conversations with you, and it's been fun to prepare this and think about it with you. So thanks very, very much. Bye.
Thank you.
I'll be eager to hear how things
Thank
go
you,
and how useful you find it.
Thanks, Dave.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
You bet.